Hi everyone, welcome back to 2019 and the inner confines of the Fendrin Cast team car. Despite what we said and how we advertised the last show, this is actually episode 115. So if you're working on count back, I don't know how to count basically, poor maths. We're back and actively looking to get into the 2019 season, which is rapidly approaching, and that kind of even equates to mainland Europe as well as the Australian races, which really particularly exciting, but other than a chance for teams to reveal their newest kit launch, which seems to be a thing in cycling nowadays, doesn't it? All of that to come, and hopefully once the racing gets going and the season gets a bit more engaging, we'll be back a bit more regularly and trying to keep you abreast of what's occurring in the world of pro cycling. The winter has yielded one story that is probably bigger than any, and that is the end of Team Sky at the end of this season, which is something we can cover. It's also yielded quite a few interesting transfers. I suppose the one that people seem to be the most excited about was Richie Porte going to Trek from BMC, and we've also had the Greg Van Avermaet going across to the new CCC team that sprung up out of the ashes of BMC. So plenty of transfers. We covered them a while back, but it's interesting now to start to see the new kits. We've seen riders starting to go to their training camps. That January 1st deadline, or the 31st of December deadline, where you have those weird photos of riders riding an old team kit and new old bikes and stuff amongst their new teammates and things. We've gone past that, so we can start to plan and look ahead for the Tour Down Under. And dare I say it, some of the early season week-long stage races like the Algarve and some classics. We'll have some proper bike racing coming up soon. That isn't to say that it hasn't been an action-packed winter. It's been an action-packed winter of cyclocross, if you've been watching who's going to be coming second. If you've been looking for a winner, Matthew van der Poel has absolutely rinsed everyone else in the field on pretty much every race he's done. I think he's something like 25 from 29. And this has seen him have a few crashes recently, including one with a steward that was reminiscent of that stage finish in the Vuelta last year, where the Agir d'Azur rider collided it was a race referee, I think, wasn't it, in that one? But yeah, he's had that. He's started to misjudge things. I don't know whether he's forcing it. Ever since he got taken to task by Roger de Vlaminck, saying that cyclocross had become boring, that he was so dominant, he's actually tried to dominate it even more. He's been relatively successful at that, but you just wonder now whether these one or two little mistakes are starting to creep in, and he's trying to force to keep that form for the Worlds, which are still a few weeks away. So it will be fascinating to see if he's still got it as we go through the next few weeks, whether or not his form will start to dip, or whether or not, you know, he's just that far ahead of everyone else that it doesn't really matter. He could turn up on a three-speed hubbed chopper and probably still have enough to win the Worlds, and I suspect that that's probably the most likely outcome. But he definitely is making mistakes that he wasn't making, you know, 5-6 weeks ago. Now, whether that gives Wout van Aert any cause for optimism, he seems to be a rider that does start the cross season slow and come on strong towards the end, and he's done that a couple of years running now. He's probably not started it quite as slow as he started this one. And with Van Aert, I still think that there's a lot of emotion and lots of energy that's been tied up in his transfer that he's negotiated away from Verandas Willems to Team Jumbo. And he has done that, forced the move through, but it feels like it's cost him a winter. And as of March he'll be fine, he can join his new team and get cracking, but it's wonder what that effect's had on him and whether it has caused him or will cause him issues down the line in the peloton. And you wonder whether the Verandas Willems Charles riders, and they're now, some of those will have lost jobs or known people who've lost jobs in the merger with Roompot, whether or not Van Aert might not get any favours on the road now as a result of maybe his actions being seen by them as part of the problem, not part of a solution for that particular team. It'll be interesting. It's a shame in a way, because I enjoyed seeing the Verandas Willems jersey up there in the Tour of Flanders and the Strada Bianchi. It was nice to see a different kit. And even though we're going to see loads of new kits this year, there seems to be nothing too innovative or exciting out there. I'm not a big fan of any of them. And there's only really Education First and Rafa to unveil. The Trek one's probably the nicest, and not a big fan of Trek or Trek bikes, so that takes some doing. So crosses, quite a lot of the iconic races have already gone for the season, but the main frustration has kind of remained the fact that a number of them weren't on available on Eurosport, but GCN have picked up that slack. So if you're on Facebook and you are following GCN, you can watch reruns of those races on your phone. Apparently there's a swanky little app you can get as well for an Amazon Fire Stick, which will enable you to watch them on your TV, which is essentially what we're all looking for, I suppose, isn't it, out of a cross race. Good, so season's starting fairly soon. The Tour Down Under, it's got a reasonably good field, as seems to be the way now. A lot of big riders want to go down there and kind of hone their form or get started. We seem to have like two routes now towards the big races of the summer, and a number of those can start in Australia. You've got the Colombian races coming up soon, it can start there. You've also got a little bit further on, you've got the Middle Eastern ones, and then we kind of converge back on Europe. There's like a classic route, there's a week-long stage race route, and it all starts again, and it all kind of comes together ahead of probably Milan-San Remo, which is the first real kind of junction of the season. That's around the Paris-Nice Tirreno-Adriatico time, and it's really close, and it's that close that you would imagine now a lot of the pro riders who will be taking part in these big races will be not that far off where they need to be shape and fitness wise. It's been interesting to read up as many sort of training articles and things as possible, and a lot of it is now kind of focusing almost the marginal gain the marginal gains with bikes and equipment. Despite what some people have said about how much better the specialised bikes are than the rest of the pelotons, generally the bikes don't make massive amount of differences. The group sets, clothing, all of that kind of stuff. The marginal gains there have been properly savaged back. In terms of training, power meters have made that kind of level out a little bit. So what I've seen quite a bit of this winter in various feeds and social media and stuff is a lot of riders who are looking for that little bit extra to come from off-bike work, and not by that the old early 90s where you always used to see pictures of riders skiing and their first training camp was at the top of an Alp and they'd all ski down and have a good time. This is, you know, the body weight exercises, you know, repetitions, not necessarily weights, because there's not in the road cyclists, there's not the desire for too much bulk, but we seem to be seeing a lot of off the bike work, instas and things that are coming, that seem to be coming to the fore. A lot of that was started by Bradley Wiggins. I remember him saying ages ago, around the time he won the Tour de France, that for a period at the start of the year, he used to find himself, he felt, doing as much stretching off the bike as pedaling on the bike. So we'll see how that goes, whether that's a trend and whether there isn't, and you know, a guru who pops up, a yoga guru or something, who can make the difference and finally get Richie Porte to finish a Grand Tour, let alone win one. We shall see. It's fascinating, isn't it, how training and all that kind of stuff's evolved. I was riding alongside a guy on Sunday, and he had a brilliant old Olmo frame and all the lovely, you know, shiny components, stainless steel components, a brilliant looking bike. And we were chatting about the winter and the fact that this was a lovely dry and relatively warm Sunday morning. And he was saying that, you know, that many years ago when he first started out, riders generally weren't particularly that interested in touching their bikes in January. They weren't that keen on performing, you know, or getting out there in the cold, risking getting a cold, risking falling off on some ice. And, you know, we sort of pedaled along talking about some of the changes in training in that respect. And I remember when I first started out 26 years ago, or whatever that really large number actually is, we were pretty much the same. On a Sunday, we would go out, we would ride a small gear, it'd be repetition, it would be cadence, and it would be 60, 70, 80 miles, and there wouldn't be a protracted coffee stop. Someone from the club would, if there was a number of juniors, would be there in their car, and we'd go like almost point to point. So we'd ride out through the lanes to Grantham and then take a direct-ish route, you know, back. And sometimes that would be the A1, or the, you know, the hard shoulder of the A1, because there wasn't that much traffic about, you know, it'd be through the middle of Stamford, all of that kind of stuff. And that sort of thing has changed, because now training is condensed, and whether that's because people are a lot more time pressured, that their training has to be time pressured, or there's a feeling that, you know, the closer to a simulation of a race or a sportif or a fondo that you can get in your training, the better the body's reaction to that is. And it's interesting, because excuse me, I'm trying to work on a base at the moment, because I've not really, you know, had a sustained period on my bike, but I'm trying to work on a base fitness that will allow me to do miles at the weekends and a bit more intensity during the week. And I'm finding that, you know, and we talked about it last time on the show, that the virtual cycling is helping me out with that, because it's a session on the turbo that is probably a lot more intense than sessions I would, you know, previously have done on the turbo, because you're chasing a little dot on a virtual screen. And that, you know, sounds ridiculous. You should have the morale and the motivation to be able to turn your pedals with a bit of force and put a bit of power down, regardless of, you know, whether you're, as I was the other day, chasing a guy from the Netherlands and a guy from Japan through the streets of Luxembourg. But it's that, you know, simulation almost that puts you in the position where you feel like, you know, you're competing. And I was reading in this month's Pro Cycling that Mark Cavendish is the guest editor of, him talking to Rod Ellingworth, and how Rod Ellingworth almost seemed to say, yeah, I didn't used to ride my riders going out on a training ride and, you know, pretending they were in the finale of the Tour of Flanders. And in a perverse way, there's some kind of logic to that. So the season kicks off with the Tour Down Under. Historically a sprinter's race for the majority, and we've seen Caleb Ewan dominate it, we've seen Andre Greipel dominate it. There's the one hilly stage with Wollunga Hill that seems to separate them and has been a launch pad for like Daryl Impey and Richie Porte in previous years to go on and win the race. what's good about the Tour Down Under is that the format and the route don't generally seem to change. It starts with a crit. There's been some crits down there ahead of the Australian Championships. And it seems to be almost like an easy way in, and that's another key difference that we've touched on, is that in previous years riders used to go to Paris-Nice or Tirreno or one of those sort of early March stage races, and they would keep their woolly jerseys and their gloves on. Now they're racing as hard as they can to try and shed those. Some of that is because of wildcard placings. Although the Giro's announcing theirs as early as next week, which will be good for the teams that it'll be, which are likely to be Bardiani and Celi Italia and Giovanni Cynic. But there is, a lot of racing early on in those races that works riders probably harder than they were 20, 30 years ago. But it's for me, it's more entertaining. I enjoy those early season stage races as much as the next man, and like everyone, I think I'm chomping at the bit to see some riders putting some miles down and putting some watts down. With that in mind, I suppose we should probably put in a few predictions, maybe of what riders we think are going to be ones that shine in 2019. Now, as part of the Bike Radar Forum community, I've got my list of riders pretty close to my chest, pretty secure. I've picked 9, not necessarily as a stage race team, and we'll go through those actually in a bit more detail. We'll do a specific podcast on those 9 riders and go through them and where they're at. In terms of overall, because I've tried to pick a few riders with a story to tell as opposed to just, the best 9 riders in the world, the 3 best in climbing, sprinting and time trialing. I've tried to make it a bit of a story and a bit of an evolution. In terms of next year or this year, where the big races I think will be won, I think Dumoulin is an interesting one. It'll be interesting indeed to see where his priorities lie. Unfortunately, in terms of like excitement and spectacle, I can't see beyond Sky for the Tour de France, and I think I can't see beyond Chris Froome. I know Geraint Thomas probably doesn't listen to this show, but he does like to take podcasters to task. I just think his tour was what we've seen those down the ages where, with Ulrich and Bjarne Riis, where a Tour de France win kind of almost signalled the end of one generation or the start of a new generation. The Tour de France thrives on order. It's had Froome, for right or wrong. It had Armstrong. It had Indurain. It had Hino. And so it thrives as a race on order, really, in the general classement. And once a rider wins one, he goes on and wins 2 or 3. We've seen that with Froome. I fear that his time is near in terms of the end of him winning it, but I think he might just have enough to win it next year. Of course, we'll have to have a proper scan of the routes and see a bit nearer the time who the contenders are. But that would be, my feeling, that he would go close to winning that. The World Championships in Yorkshire would be lumpy. I can see Peter Sagan getting his jersey back, or the other scenario, I like how it's now, I class it as his jersey even though he doesn't currently have it. Anyone but Valverde would be nice. Maybe Alaphilippe will right the wrongs of last year. Or on that sort of course, it could be claggy weather. Someone like Tesh Benoot could be world champion. Or even Van Avermaet, depending on who's in form and who's leading the Belgian squad at that particular time. So plenty of options with the Worlds. Maybe a Yates twin will be up there, but I can't see that manifesting itself in a win. I think maybe as well, Lizzie Deignan for the women's race. I know she's already focusing really hard on that. She's kind of told, various media outlets. That's almost her focus, to get back and get back riding. I think that the women's peloton's moving on to a level, a different level, and I wonder whether she'll find it as easy to slip back in and win. I think she'll still get results, I think she'll still get placements, but I'm not sure she'll be, you know, find it quite as easy to be in the top table. And that's no reflection on pregnancy or recovery after pregnancy. I just feel that whatever reason you have a long period out now, in women's racing or in men's racing, the standard is such that it's really hard to get back to that level. And I think that could be the case here. In terms of the classics, we're almost waiting for a classics, a dominator to come out. It's not quite been Sagan yet, although, you know, he's won a monument the last couple of years. But who could that, you know, who could that be? Who is that person that's going to shoot out and suddenly start to dominate? We've had the, you know, the Museo era morphed into the Cancellara Boonen era perfectly, and they were great years in Flanders, great years in Roubaix. But now where is that next name? For me, I've been kind of almost hoping for ages that it's going to be Jürgen Roelandts. It's not, because he's too old and now rides for Movistar. But maybe one that we've talked up a little bit on this show under the radar, Jasper Stuyven, of Trek. He could be something quite special. I don't see him at the moment. You know, okay, fine, he was in a breakaway in a Grand Tour this last year, but I don't see that that's his priority. I think he's a classics man through and through. And maybe the return to Trek of friend of the show, Edward Toynes, from Giant Sunweb, could help him out. You know, you look at the Trek classics team and you think Stuyven and Turns, they could do some proper damage. I'd like to think that, you know, that they would. So we see whether he's got enough in his locker, Stuyven, to go on and dominate classics for years to come is another matter, you know. But you look around, Terpstra's gone to a French team. I think the feeling is that he's gone to maximise his earning potential rather than as a career development move. So I don't see Terpstra winning one. Gilbert's quite old. It's the new generation of quick steppers. Are they quite, you know, are they quite ready? At some point, they're going to have a bad spring. I don't see Lampert winning like Flanders or Roubaix. So we're in a position where there's almost like a chance for a new leader to kind of pop up and say, I'm here. It could be, you know, after his ride in Roubaix last year, it could be Sylvain Dillier. He could be the man that actually says, do you know what, these are the races for me. Could be Matthew van der Poel, although you would wonder whether Corendon Circus, his team, would have much left in the tank after, you know, riding things like the Arctic race last summer and then going a full winter supporting him through the cross. He's ridden, obviously, that full winter of cross as well, dominating, as we've said. So where is that opposition coming from? It could be Van Aert, but he's going to be starting in March rather than some of the others in Feb. So it's wide open in many ways, that, you know, this classic season upcoming. It'd be nice to see Phil Gill win one more, for one last time, for posterity's sake. It'd be nice to see a Lotto Soudal rider win one as well, because as a team that, you know, has presided their rider won probably the best one-day race I've ever seen in the form of André Schmil in the 94 Paris-Roubaix. And it's funny, that race, the more I think about it over the years, and, you know, 20-odd years ago, the thicker and bleaker the snow gets. And to be fair, the snow didn't look that bad last time I watched it back on YouTube. So, you know, maybe I've done Mr. Schmil a massive over-service rather than disservice. And maybe we'll see a Brit win one. Mark Cavendish could win Milan-San Remo, health permitting. Outside of that, you know, it's difficult to see. We had that little burst where Stannard did really, really well. But I don't feel like there's a British monument winner naturally kind of sitting out there. Maybe Sam Bennett in one of the midweek Belgian classics would be, you know, the right answer. He seems to be having one or two issues with his Bora team at the moment, as they're, you know, they've kind of picked other riders ahead of him for their long squad for the Giro. So maybe he won't, but there's a lot to look forward to. There's a lot of fascinating racing to come. Parkours changing, teams changing, riders changing, and that overriding dynamic of what will the Sky riders be like? How will Sky perform? Will the riders be turning in and looking at for a contract next year? So will you find, you know, Sky riders in the breakaway on flat days of the Tour de France, or will it be a case that they will still ride with that, you know, determination and team ethic that they've ridden for the past sort of 8-9 years? And I suppose only time will tell. The road will decide that. So fascinating stuff. Plenty to look forward to. Good to be back on the show as well. We will do our podcast of the riders, our riders to watch, our Fendrian team of 2019 pretty soon. And hopefully you will agree with all 9 selections, although it's kind of like the whole point of the sport and things, isn't it? Is to have a debate about stuff, so maybe you won't. All that remains for me to say is thank you very much for listening. Still no resolution on the EU suffix to the website address. We'll figure something out. But in the meantime, if you follow us on Twitter, Facebook, all the usual channels, and just keep sharing the podcast and keep listening. In the meantime, have a great week and speak to you soon. Bye-bye.